In mid-sentence, on Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis, we're discussing Ezra's Takana. Okay, let's just get back. We're mamish right in the thick of a heavy discussion, so let's just catch up. We're discussing Ezra's Takana. Ezra made a Takana that a person who had a seminal emission, a Baal Keri, is not allowed to learn Torah, Davin, etc. until he goes to the mikvah. We have Rabbi Yehuda who indicates in our Mishnah that he disagrees with the whole concept. Because our Mishnah said, skip all the brachas, think Kriya Shema, and Rabbi Yehuda said, no, make all the brachas. So where we stand now, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the whole concept. He says, no, Baal Keri can do everything as usual. So now let's see. So we're going to try, what we're going to try to do now is show how, disprove this idea, show that Rabbi Yehuda does indeed agree with this prohibition. So we're going to start on Chof Aleph Amud Beis, the second wide line. Tanan. So as we discussed last time, Keri on the Araisa level is from the weakest forms of Tumah, from the lightest forms of Tumah. There are much heavier Tumahs. But yet Ezra chose to prohibit Torah learning in Tefillah only for this Tumah. As we'll see soon, it's because of the nature of the Tumah. This is the nature of Tumah that comes from a state, right? When a person has a seminal emission, that comes from a state of, whether he was with his wife or whether it came by itself, a state of we'll call it frivolity or whatever it is, that is incongruous with Torah learning. We'll elaborate on that more. That has to be well explained because we're supposed to be with our wives. But whatever it is, therefore only this Tumah was prohibited. A person can be a Tmei Meis, you can juggle Shrotzim, etc. You can learn Torah.
Could you say it's a frivolity and not like a negative force, which means an unclean thing?
Let's see later. Let's see later. So all the other tumas, as heavy as they are no problem. This is a problem only because of the state of mind the person is in. But we run into a funny situation. What does Ezra say? Ezra says you have to purify yourself from this keri before you learn Torah. And now we run into what we discussed last time, a certain paradox. What happens if a person is a zav? Zav is a really heavy tumah. He's tamei for a week. He's allowed to learn Torah, right? Now, he's tummy from Sunday to Sunday, okay? On Tuesday, he has a seminal emission. So what are we going to tell him? Well, you can't learn Torah until you purify yourself. You got to go to the mikveh and purify yourself. Go to the mikveh and purify myself. I'm still going to be a zav for another 4 days. So what? It seems completely meaningless to go to the mikveh now. What will it help? I'm not purifying anything. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda makes a logical argument that we'll see soon, that yes, in such a situation where the keri is completely overshadowed by a more severe tumah, so just forget about the keri, don't go to the mikveh, and learn Torah. When keri comes up, is simply swallowed up by a much bigger tumah, we just disregard the keri. But
why don't you just say that today operate on two separate tracks? Just one.
No, but if the point is go and purify yourself. What point is there to purifying yourself? All right, let's see. I have two opinions here. Let's see. Two opinions here. Let's see. Yes, all other Tmeim can learn Torah all they want. Tumah is not conflict with learning Torah. It's specifically the Baal Keri because of the state of mind that produces it. That we'll discuss later. That is Aser. So now, Tanan. It says in the Mishnah, Zav Shera'o Keri. If a Zav has a seminal emission, in which case, again, you can go to the mikveh, it's meaningless, seemingly. V'nida shepolta shichva zera. You have a woman who's a nida, also a very heavy tumah. And then she ejects some seed from relations that she had with her husband 2 days ago. That also renders her a balas keri. She also is not allowed to daven or engage in any Torah until she goes to the mikveh. Or, hamishameshes v'vas adam. Let's say a woman had relations with her husband and ejected some keri, and then afterwards she becomes a nida. So here, yes, she was a baal keri before that, But now she's a nida, and tevila is going to be meaningless anyways on the deoraisa level. Tzrichim tevila. Yet the Tanakhama says, like you were arguing, you have to go to the mikveh nevertheless, because it's two completely separate tracks. Like you said, the on the deoraisa level, you're right. The keri is just nothing here. But on the derabanan level, as far as Torah goes, they said all other tumas are nothing. Keri is a problem. So go to the mikveh for keri, even though you'll remain a zav afterwards. What's that? Well, we do pask in this way essentially, but we have to see how we deal with this whole keri concept. That's going to be coming up. We'll see. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, once there's a bigger tumah, keri simply doesn't count, and you don't have to go to the mikveh. Now, let's remember that this is Rabbi Yehuda who allegedly holds that there's no such thing as tumas keri at all. And yet, he's saying here that in a case where a man is already a zav, he's such a heavier tumah, then forget about the keri. So ad kan loy potar Rabbi Yehuda ela bezav shiro keri. Rabbi Yehuda is exempting one here. In the case of a zav who had keri, the meikar elav batvilu. Because in the first place, this guy can't purify himself. Avo bal keri greida. But in a normal case of keri, the implication is mechayev. He would say go to the mikveh.
Yeah. Or the same Rabbi Yehuda that we thought was arguing, it was only in that.
Right. Here seems to be saying that no, only in this unusual case where the guy's a zav, anyways, you skip it. But otherwise, he's with everybody on the same page as everybody else as far as the concept of keri goes. So what will you tell me? Who adinda feel about keri greida nami potter Rabbi Yehuda? No, perhaps Rabbi Yehuda holds it not just a zav. A regular bal keri also can just skip the mikveh. Vahaydi komiflegi bezav shiro keri. So why are they discussing this special case of a zav? Loidiach hakoychan derabanan. You're right, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need to discuss this case. He says every Baal Keri can just skip the mikveh. But we want to show the Chachamim. The Chachamim say a Baal Keri has to go to the mikveh. And here we're telling you that not only a regular Baal Keri, but even a Baal Keri who is overshadowed by Zav, in which case you might think that the Keri is meaningless, still the Chachamim say have to go to the mikveh. But Rabbi Yehuda, maybe he says here you're exempt. He'd say in a normal case of Keri that you're also exempt. But aim is safe. Now let's continue. Now let's know carefully how that Mishnah continued. Hamishameshes v'ro'as odam tzricha tevila. The Mishnah gave a couple of cases. It gave a case of a zav who then had a seminal emission. It gave a case of a nida who had a seminal emission in woman's terms. But then it gave another case. It gave a case of a woman who had relations with her husband and emitted the seed such that she was a balkari. And then afterwards she became a nida. This is a bit different. There might be room to argue that if a person was a Zav before he became a Balkari, then we say the Balkari just it doesn't register at all, right? Such a severe form of Tumah, the Balkari doesn't register at all. When a person became a Balkari first, right, and then afterwards became something more severe, then you might say, no, once the Keri registered, you have to go to the mikveh. So therefore, the Mishnah is making a point of saying two cases. There's a case of a Zav first, who then became a Balkari, in which case, there's more room to argue that maybe just forget about it. Keri doesn't register on top of Zav. But then, the Mishnah says, not only in that case, but there's another case, where also, we have a Machloikis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. In a case where first she became a Balkari, right, such that she registered as a Balkari, then she became a Nida, here also we have the Machloikis, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Now, who? It would be the same thing. Right. That doesn't matter. Lamaisi, as soon as he becomes a Balkari, it registers that he cannot learn until he goes to the mikveh. Now, later developments are not going to change that. If he later becomes a Zav, it's not going to change that. Now, Leman Ktanila, which opinion needed to stress also this case of a woman who first had Keri and then became Anida? Ilema the Rabbanon, according to the Chacham, in this case doesn't need to be stated. Hashta umazav shero keri. What do the Chacham say? That a keri always has to go to the mikveh. Even in a heavy duty case where the guy was a zav first and later became a bal keri, the Chachamim say the keri still registers on top of the zav. The meikar elav batvilo. In such a case where he was a zav first, where he already, the mikvah wasn't relevant in the first place, and yet mechayv rabbanon, the Chachamim say when he subsequently becomes a bal keri, he's got to go to the mikvah. Hamishameshes veraz adam. In a case where the woman first became a balas keri, she first had her seminal emission, and then afterwards became a nida, the meikar bastvilahi, when she first became a balkeri, when she first had her seminal emission, the mikvah was relevant. Did register that she has to go to the mikvah. So like kol shekin, certainly the Chachamim will say there that she has to go to the mikvah. If you have to go to the mikvah when you were a zav first and later the balkeri took effect, certainly you have to go to the mikvah when you were first a balkeri and then later the more severe tumah took effect. So the Chachamim didn't need to state that case. For them it's obvious that if zav turned keri has to go to the mikvah, certainly keri turned nido or zav has to go to the mikvah. Elo lav Rabbi Yehudi. Rather, it must be that this case is stressed to show us the extent of Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Not only does Rabbi Yehuda exempt in a case where a zav later became a bal keri, but he even exempts in a case where a keri later became a zav or a nido. Ah, so the mission is coming to show us the extent of Rabbi Yehuda's shita. What's that? That's what we're asking. We're showing that in this Mishnah it seems clear that he does recognize the concept, just to do away with it in these different situations, right? But that seems to go against our Mishnah, which seems to say that he doesn't recognize the whole concept. So whatever it is, v'davka k'tanila, Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah is showing us exactly the extent of Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Specifically in this case, mishameshes veroas anida in a tzricha tvila, that yes, a case where a woman became a balkeri and then she became a nida knocks it out of the park, then Rabbi Yehuda exempts her of tvila. Avo balkeri greida, but in a case where you have just a regular old balkeri, mechayev, then he would agree. So this Mishnah is basically showing us, it's giving us parameters of Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Yes, he says that a bal keri is exempt of tefillah in those cases where you have a different, more severe tumah knocking it out of the ballpark. When a person is only a bal keri, the implication of this Mishnah is clearly that you have to go to the mikveh. So the Gemara accepts. You're right, it's clear from this Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda does hold of the concept. An ordinary bal keri has to go to the mikveh, cannot learn Torah. If so, we have to turn back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that Rabbi Yehuda said, no, make the brachas, make all the brachas. So the Gemara says, all right, we have to reinterpret our Mishnah. Lo yitema mevarech. When Rabbi Yehuda said to make the brachas, he did not mean to articulate them. Elo meharher. He said to think them. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that a bal keri shouldn't be davening. Just whereas the Tanakhama said, don't even think the brachas, Rabbi Yehuda says, think the brachas. That's what he meant. He certainly does agree that bal keri is restricted from ordinary davening and learning. So that's where we've gotten now to defining Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with keri, and when he says in the Mishnah, make the brachas, he means think them. Now, okay.
Doesn't
the Tanakhama say Tumahar? The Tanakhama said think kriya shma, but not the brachas.
Right.
So Rabbi Yehuda is saying think the brachas too.
That's the homophobic.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, no, that would be a nice way out of it, right? To basically boil it down to Rabbi Yehuda just saying think. But, you want to explain Rabbi Yehuda away by saying that he means think? No. What Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah to say those brachas, he meant say it. And if so, again, we're going to be back to our catch 22. Vatanya, we have a brisa in which he makes it clear. Balkeri she'ein loy mayim litbon. If a balkeri does not have water to toivel in, he should say kriya shma ve'einoy mevarich lefanel v'loy l'achreo, without making a bracha before or afterwards. Va'ichel pitoy, he can eat his bread, or mevarich l'achreo, makes the bracha afterwards, berkas hamazon, right, deoraisa. Ve'einoy mevarich lefanel, he does not make the bracha beforehand. Avol maharer b'libo, he should just think it. Ve'inim mitzi bisfasel, but not articulated. So you have Divrei Reb Meir. That's Reb Meir. So Reb Meir says, think it, don't articulate it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and here we can't get away from it. Ben kach o ben kach mitzi bisfasel. He can articulate it all. So now we mamish have our contradiction very pronounced. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the one hand, that yes, the Balkeri is restricted from Torah and davening. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda is saying he can articulate davening as usual. What's going on here?
Maybe Rabbi Yehuda in the other case is just dealing with the mikvah track. When you have to go to the mikvah.
Well, what would you have to go to the mikvah for? It would only be because of this Tevilas Ezra. If you're just talking as far as Taurus goes, certainly if you have a more severe tumah, wait for the more severe tumah to pass. He's talking as far as this takana that you have to go to the mikvah before davening and learning. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok says, and here we're really going to get into the distinctions of this whole takana. Asan Rabbi Yehuda kihilchis derech eretz. Yes, Rabbi Yehuda does agree that a balkeri should not be engaged in Torah, but when it comes to brachas, that he says you can, based on the idea that we're going to be seeing soon, that this takana, this prohibition for a balkeri to engage in kedusha, might not be all-encompassing. Might only be certain more higher-level elements of kedusha, as we'll see soon. Up till now, we've just been saying absolute balkeri, no davening, no learning. Period, right? But now Rabbi Yehuda is going to come in. Now we're going to see now that there are many opinions that say no, it's not quite that black and white. Could be some things yeah, could be some things not. And this is basically what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Sure, Balkeri is not allowed in Torah, but brachas he can say. Why brachas? Yes. Asan Rabbi Yehuda ki hilchus derech eretz. Rabbi Yehuda holds that that's kind of like hilchus derech eretz, meaning there are areas of halacha that are not, areas of Torah that are dealing more with derech eretz than actual chiyuvim. And in terms of Torah learning, that's not considered as deep into Torah learning as other things. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, real Torah learning, that not. But Hilchos Derech Eretz is okay. And that's how Rabbi Yehuda treats brachas as well. Say a bracha is not really called engaging. Engaging, we're going to see soon. We're going to see seven different shittas on the matter. But engaging in Torah means really getting into it. Brachas is on par with Hilchos Derech Eretz, which is not quite that level of severity. What's that? What's an example of Hilchos Derech Eretz? Kol yom egadalti bein hachachamim v'leimotzos el aguf toiv mishtika. Right? Shimon says, all my days I grew among the chachamim, and I find nothing more beneficial for the body than keeping quiet. That's the idea of Hilchos Derech Eretz. We're not talking about a hard and fast halacha. Hilchos Derech Eretz. So now we're really going to get into this discussion. We've already introduced the idea that the prohibition to engage in Torah and Tefillah is not black and white. And now we're actually going to address that. So let's just tie up the lid on Rabbi Yehuda, because now we're going to really move into the more general discussion. Tied up the lid on Rabbi Yehuda. Up to now we were discussing Rabbi Yehuda's individual opinion. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is, yes, certainly he agrees with the takana that a balkeri has to go to the mikveh before engaging in Torah, but those lighter areas of Torah, hilchus derech eretz, even saying brachas, are permitted. Detanya. Now we're going to move into a brisa that presents all of these distinctions. So here we're really going to, this is really a brisa that is going to introduce to us the takana of Ezra of not engaging, balkeri not engaging in Torah. So it kind of worked backwards. Now we're really starting the subject. We kind of came in the back door. What does Rabbi Yehuda hold on the subject? And now we'll get into the subject. Where does this whole idea originate from? Ve'hoidatom livanecho v'livnei banecho. It says, you shall teach the Torah to your children and to your grandchildren. Uksiv basrei. And then it says, yoyim asher amadto lifnei Hashem elokecho b'choyriv. Like on the day that you stood before Hashem at Choyriv on Har Sinai. And therefore, Ma lahalon be'ema ube'yira be'reses ube'zeah, just like at Har Sinai, you had to be in a state of awe, fear, trembling, and sweat. That's what was going on at Har Sinai. Afkan de'ema ubiyira ubereses ubezeya. Listen to this. All Torah learning has to be in that same state of awe, fear, trembling, and sweat. This is, what's that? Oh, we'll see. Here we're going to get into some very fascinating insights. Mikan amru, and therefore the Chachamim said, Hazavim v'mitzayroim uboim al anidois. All the different forms of tumah, zav, mitzayra, these are severe forms of tumah. Even people who cohabit with anida, meaning once he went to the mikveh, he's not a balkari. A person who cohabits with anida presumably is also a balkari, right? Wouldn't the two go together? But no, we're talking about a person who cohabits with anida, b'shoigig, whatever it is, which turns him into anida. Really, he has tumas nida. That's what happens. If a man cohabits with anida, he becomes anida. He has this tumas nida for 7 days. So basically, we're talking about a male nida for all practical purposes. Okay. We already have some riddles. If someone asks you, how can there be a male Nida? And how can there be a woman Balkari? If they're learning this Gemara, we should know the answer to both. So now, all these people, Mutarim Likrois B'Taira, they can learn Taira, Nevim, Uksuvim, all of Nach, no problem. Lishnois B'Mishnah, you learn Mishnah, Ugmara, Mahalochas, V'Agodas. Fine. Tuma is not a conflict to learning Taira. But a Baal Keri, in terms of Tumah, is the lightest form of Tumah. But in terms of congruity with Torah, Baal Keri not. Why? Because once again, Torah must be approached with a state of awe, fear, trembling, and sweat. We'll actually explain what all these things are. Blineder. And Baal Keri, the nature of Tumas Keri is, it represents a state that's the opposite of this.
No.
What's that? No, but the Tumah, this is the Tumah that represents this state. It's the Tumah that represents this state until you actively get yourself out of the state. How do you actively get yourself out of the state? By going to the mikveh.
Isn't that just a mental thing?
It's a symbolic thing.
So it is a simple thing.
What?
Is this type Tumah Keri a mental?
Let's develop the issue properly, and then we'll see if there are questions afterwards. Let's develop it first. My wife's teacher used to say, "Don't catch the fish before the net." Okay, so let's see. So first, we have to just stress. Right, there seems to be saying something negative here about a Balkari. Balkari, the typical Balkari, we're all mechuyev to become Balkari in our lives, right? There's a man who had relations with his wife. Are we saying that there's something negative about that? So the answer is, not really. But yet, let's break this down properly. Let's understand that the truth is that this is very fundamental in understanding a lot of things about Takanas Chachomim in general. Let's ask a question. Keri, man who had relations with his wife, is in a state that is incongruous with learning Torah, right? So how come it took about 1,000 years for Ezra to pick that up? Beforehand, this was a takana of Ezra. Beforehand, no such thing.
Well, there were already rules in place, right? You were covering Sparim.
Absolutely, but how come this didn't apply? If we're saying that the Torah tells you that based on what we understand that the required state of mind for learning Torah to be, that it's incongruous with the Baal Keri. How come this first came up at Ezra's time?
But you would have said that people back then had that kind of a sensitivity, and they never would have, allowed themselves to go, No.
And not that they wouldn't allow. Put it the other way around. But the truth is that if that was so, without a takana, the tefillah would do nothing. The whole reason is because you said close. No, the point is that Ezra sensed in earlier times the two were not a conflict at all. A person was able to be with his wife without losing the proper required state of mind for Torah learning. That's the point here. See, the Gemara says about Rabbi Elazar, he was able to be with his wife with the full intensity of what relations with the wife was supposed to be without losing that state of a person who's in the presence of the Shekhinah. in general, anytime we see there were very choshev takanas that the Chachamim made throughout the generations, we have to realize that many of these things are great enhancements of Yiddishkeit. Many of the takanas of the Chachamim, yet they always represent, this is a fundamental principle, they always represent a decline in the state of the people of the nation in general. The fact that the takana was necessitated.
Same idea.
It used to be multiple wives. Today it's such a foreign concept, right? Multiple wives. But how could it be? But the truth is, yes, people in the outside world, having multiple children is the same sacrilege, right? How can you have multiple children? How can you split love between two children? But the answer is that no, a parent has 10 children. They have the capacity to love all the 10 children the same. In earlier times, people were much bigger. They had much more capacity. And the husband was able to provide emotionally for more than one wife. This is something that's impossible today. We have to have that very clear. It's impossible today. We can barely, right, hope that we're scratching 80%. Right? We don't have that capacity. But in earlier times, yes, they had enough emotional capacity to be able to provide more than one wife's emotional needs. It's mind-boggling. You can't fathom how that could be. But whatever it is, it's the same idea here. Yes, in earlier times, people were capable of doing everything, even relations with their wives, with that state of that they could go to Har Sinai. Even though at the end of the day, the Torah Lamaisa did not want Bali carry at Har Sinai, right? But still, in a general way, they were able to do that. Ezra reached a point where he said, no, people are already losing the capability of that broad-mindedness of being able to have all those different feelings there at the same time, and therefore it's necessary to implement this takana. So, therefore, yes, he derived it from the pasuk, and it's interesting. Some of the Mefarshim say that's also part of the reason why they were able later to abolish it, because this same trend continued just in the opposite direction. I mean, this is one mahalach in the Mefarshim. Most of the Rishonim say otherwise, but I'll just give this mahalach because it's very insightful. Later, they abolished it, as we'll see soon. Why did they abolish it later? Again, if Torah is supposed to be learned in such a state, how can you come and say, ah, forget about it? But the answer is mamish the same idea, just continuing a little further down the road. A little further down the road, we reached a situation that people were not capable of maintaining the state of dread, the state of awe, that people were able to if they would not be involved with their wives, right? So they say, okay, at this point already, it doesn't really make a difference. We let it back in. But we'll see. That's a very specific mahalach. We'll see other explanations of the Rishonim as to how they did allow it back in.
You say that like a chassan in his first 7 days, even though technically he's part of the davening, say go ahead.
Very good. Same exact thing. Very good. Same exact thing. And in earlier times they said, a chassan can't maintain the proper kavanah for Kriya Shema when he's preoccupied. And later they said, nobody ever has that level of kavanah. Today a chassan can do it too. Same, mamish the same idea. Mamish the same idea. So now, but whatever it is, yes, Ezra implemented this takana based on the understanding. That's all sechap. What lemaisa is required of us? Okay, we can't reach that level of awe, but lemaisa it's required of us to be able to at least have the concept of how a person ought to approach Torah learning. The Gra breaks it down. Let's see. Again, we have a whole sugya ahead of us. We don't even know yet that it was abolished. We're still in the point of history where it's in effect. So let's see. I'll just say the Grola Maisa breaks down, right? The Gemara says that Torah has to be approached Ve'ema Biyira Bereses Ubezeya. The Gemara is not just using every synonym in the book. Each one means something else, the Grola says. Ema means awe, what we might call Yiras HaRoimimus. A person appreciates the magnitude, the immensity of what's going on. When a person is sitting down to learn, he's actually summoning, right? We've said a few times, the Baal HaTanya says, I got the time. What time is it? Was it 9 o'clock? Oh, okay. The Baal HaTanya says, thanks, that when a person, 5 minutes ahead, okay, that when a person, right, the term is Odom HaKoyri Batayra, right? Odom HaKoyri Batayra. He says it sounds like a strange expression. Koyri Batayra, a person who's reading in Torah, sounds wrong. You don't read Torah, you learn Torah. Reading is like a superficial, you know, perusal. How do you pronounce it? I don't know. But the Baal HaTanya says, no, Kairi doesn't mean read. Kairi means to call. A person calls in the Torah. And when a person sits down to learn Torah, he's summoning Hashem. He's summoning the Shekhinah. The one who's busy running the galaxies is now coming to sit with you when you sit down to learn Torah. The person has to appreciate it and approach it with a sense of awe. Right? And then there's Yira, fear. Okay, this is the Gra. I don't know if we can handle this, but I'll say it. And then we'll take it into perspective that we have to be able to approach it according to where we're holding. But the Gra says that a person has to feel the severity, the sacrilege of interrupting your Torah with a, you know, with just ordinary talk, with small talk. That's a terrible sacrilege. Hashem is sitting and conversing with you, so to speak. When a person is learning Torah, it's actually being kissed into him by Hashem, right? A person is going to stop to talk. You have to be scared to step out of line when you're learning Torah. What's that? Avraham Avinu. To get up and be machnis orchim, yes. But to ask somebody who won the game last night, that Avraham Avinu did not do. Right? But yes, you're right. For a person to get up and do a mitzvah, yes. Then there's Birseis. Reses. Reses is trembling in a different sense. There's another fear here. Fear that I might not get it, that I might get it wrong. I might be off. Right? A person is learning Torah, he realizes what the stakes here are. I might be off. Right? That's what he said about Reb Elchanan Wasserman. He had mamish photo, like his memory was phenomenal. How he remembered whole texts, Sfarim, right? He was able to write from memory. And one of the other Gdalim explained it, that his Yirat Shamayim was so strong, right, that any word of Torah, he felt like, you know, a sacrilege if I would ever dare to forget this. And then Bezeya simply means sweat. Sweat is really nothing to do with fear or awe. Sweat is something else. It means oil, elbow grease, sweating it out. You know, you approach Torah, you don't approach with your legs crossed, chilling, you know, slouching down in the chair. You approach ready to give it your all. So that's the state that we're supposed to be approaching Torah with. And this was what Ezra was very much bringing across with this takana. So even if, as we'll see, if and how this takana applies to us, the concept certainly does. But now, whatever it is, what exactly is included in this issue? So Rabbi Yossi says, Shaina Obergilis. As we said before, the idea is that a Balkari should not be light learning, we might allow, but real heavy learning, that not. How do we define that? So we have seven shittas on the matter. Let's see. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shaina Obergilis. He can kind of quickly review things he's already fluent in. Things that you know by heart, you can review quickly. But don't get into in-depth learning even of just Mishnayos. Don't start elucidating Mishnayos in a serious way. Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef Omer, I have opinion number two. Matziyahu es HaMishnah. Mishnayos you can learn in-depth, ve'einer matziyahu es HaGemara, but not Gemara. Opinion number three. Rabbi Nosson ben Avishalem Omer, af matziyahu es HaGemara. You can learn Gemara in depth as well. Ubilvad shelo yomer azkaras shaboy. Just if a name of Hashem should ever come up in the course of your learning, don't say it. Meaning he's going most lenient. He's saying that you can do all learning. The only problem is not to say Hashem's name. This is interesting, by the way. Some of the poskim infer from here that generally, when a person is learning Gemara and name of Hashem comes up in the course of the, you should actually say the name of Hashem. Opinion number four. Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler, Talmidei shel Rabbi Akiva, Mishum Rabbi Akiva Omer. He said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, Lo yikones lemedrash kol iker. Just don't approach medrash. Medrash, there are too many psukim involved, and we don't want you involved in Torah Shebik Sav. He's coming from a completely different angle. It's not an issue of how in depth. We don't want you getting too close to Torah Shebik Sav. The Amri law, others say, He shouldn't come into the base medrash at all. Meaning, he's on the contrary, this is the most stringent. Nothing, just absolutely nothing. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, opinion number six, and this is what we've basically seen. Shainahu behilchis derech eretz. You can learn hilchis derech eretz, like we said before, the lighter halachas that are not really the heavy meat and potatoes. of Torah. So we've seen six. I promised you seven opinions. We'll see later the seventh. But meanwhile, we have six. Let's just sum them up again because we saw them quickly. You can review quickly, but don't learn even Mishnayos in depth. That's number one. Number two, Mishnayos in depth here, but not Gemara in depth. Number three, everything in depth, just don't say Hashem's name. Number four, no Medrash, no approaching Torah Shebiksav. Number five is nothing at all. And Rabbi Yehuda says, nothing except Hilchus Derech Eretz. Now, Maisib Rabbi Yehuda, there was an incident with Rabbi Yehuda, Shiral Keri, that he had a seminal emission, Vayamahalech Al Gav Hanor, and he was walking along the river with his Talmidim. Amru Loi Talmidim. His Talmidim told him, Rabbeinu. It's interesting. He wasn't ashamed of telling his Talmidim, I can't teach Torah now because I'm a Baal Keri. His Talmidim said to him, Rabbeinu, Shnei Lanu Perek Echad B'Hilchus Derech Eretz. Alright, you can't teach us Torah, but so teach us some Hilchus Derech Eretz, a good opportunity. Usually you're busy with the deep things. Now we'll learn some Hilchus Derech Eretz. So what did he do? Yorad V'Toval. He went to the river. He tabled in the river. V'shan Elohim. And then he taught them their Hilchus Derech Eretz. Amruloi. So he told them, why'd you have to do this? Loikach Limaditano Rabbeinu. Didn't you teach us? Shainehu B'Hilchus Derech Eretz? That a Baal Keri is allowed to learn Hilchus Derech Eretz? Omar Elohim. So he answered, Afal Pisha Mekel Ani Al Acherim. Even though I do rule leniently, and therefore I would rule for others that they're allowed to, Machmir Ani Al Atzmi. I personally act stringently on the matter, and therefore, yes, my personal anhaga is that I will tevel before doing this. So now, we've seen six opinions on the matter, and now we're going to see the seventh, which is Lemaisa going to be the one we're going to be busiest with. Tanya, we have a braisa that says, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira hoya omer, Ein divrei Torah mekablin tumo. This is the whole take on the whole thing. Torah is not susceptible to tumo. Just forget the whole thing. Maisa b'talmid echad, there was an incident with the Talmid, Shemegamgem lemala mi Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, who was kind of mumbling in the presence of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, meaning he was doing his learning, or possibly saying Kriya Shema, that's how some understand it, and he was mumbling it so as not to articulate it properly because he was a Baal Keri. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira understood. Omale, he said, Bni, my son, what are you mumbling for? Psach picha v'yairu dvarecha. Open your mouth, say him good, let's hear it shine through. She'ein divrei Torah mekablim tuma. Torah is not susceptible to tuma. No tuma conflicts with Torah. She'nemar, as it says in the pasuk, Haloi koi dvori ke'esh ne'um Hashem. My word is like fire, Hashem says. Ma'esh ne'um mekabel tuma. Just as fire is not susceptible to tuma, af divrei Torah einam mekablim tuma. So too, Torah is not susceptible to tumah. So basically what he's doing here is coming and doing away with the whole thing. That's opinion number seven. Nothing.
That's what we're going to have to do.
Yes, as we'll see soon, we're going to work it through until we actually reach mamish the lemaisa here. But this is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira.
I thought the problem is the sacrilege.
What's that? So he's disagreeing.
The problem is,
That's right. This is an asmachta. Really, what he's coming here and he's saying is, and Bessesa points it out, he says, Ezra knew this pasuk also, right? But it's an asmachta. Really, the pshat is of Yehuda ben Beseira came and said, no more takan. The takan is abolished. How did he have the power to do that? You know, Ezra was way before him. How could he come and abolish Ezra's takana? So there are a few explanations given by the Rishonim. The general understanding of the Rishonim is that when Ezra made the takana in the first place, as we'll see soon, it was a tough takana. It was a tough takana because not everywhere were there mikvahs easily around, etc. And therefore it never really took hold. And the din is that even though we have a rule that ein bezdin yochel levato divrei bezdin chavera, a later bezdin cannot overturn a takana made by an earlier bezdin, the rule is that that's only if the takana was implemented properly. But in a case like this where the takana never really took hold because it was too difficult for the tzibur to handle, and the years went by and it was kind of like half kept, half not, Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira came along and said, it's finished, it's abolished. That's the general explanation that's given by the Rishonim. Other explanations given by the Rishonim are that Ezra himself built into the takana that he understood that this is a tough takana, and he also understood that it would be, you know, time appropriate, age appropriate, and therefore he built into the takana that it can be abolished should the sages of a later generation decide so. Okay. But how many years were there between them? I don't know exactly, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah was toward the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, of the second Beis Hamikdash. Ezra was all the way at the beginning. So, what is it, about 300 years? Though altogether it was 400 plus years. So probably about 300 years.
Is it too premature to ask the question? Or did it carry an ideation or some negative, unclean force?
Meaning what?
Just that. Which one is?
Well, I don't know what an ideation is, to be perfectly honest.
Idea, like a fault.
What's that?
Like a fault, a frivolousness, an attitude.
No, so the pshat is, as we'll see soon, Ezra's takana had a spiritual effect. Meaning, this is the way it works. When the chachamim make a takana, it's not just a technical thing. It changes the dynamics in Shemayim. And therefore, Ezra did create a situation where a Balkeri has a certain, call it halachic or spiritual impurity upon himself that doesn't work with Torah and Tefillah. And how that works today, we'll see. We'll see. No, so it actually created a certain, we'll call it a koyach atumah, not just that there's rabbinic tumah in the technical sense, you have to go to the mikveh. But no, for example, the Rishonim will say, we'll see, well, as we really get down to the lemaisa, the Rishonim say, that meant that tefillah of a balkeri was not as accepted. It was the tefillah we'll see how this works out lemaisa, but yes, we're talking about something that actually created a certain spiritual obstacle. Okay. Now, we'll stop here. We've introduced the seven sheets. It's not now. Two things. First of all, yeah, obviously on Tuesday there is not going to be a shiur.